Now, tell us about this High Meyer Income song. What's it all about?
Well, I don't know.
You don't know?
No. I can sing it and that's all I can tell you.
Peter, well, he was dark-haired, very lively and quickly spoken, in fact.
Sir David Attenborough, remembering his one-time colleague, Peter Kennedy, whose tireless work journeying around the country, seeking out those who knew the old songs, knocking on doors and getting up close with a microphone, led not only to a huge body of work that's now an invaluable document of musical and social history, but it also helped kickstart a whole enthusiastic revival of interest in British folk song.
It's got quite a simple chorus anybody can pick up, is that right?
Well, I think so.
Well, you have a go, Herbert.
My thoughts today are far away beneath the deep blue sea. But I just go and scare for Paul so happy, gay and free.
He was particularly knowledgeable about the various technologies that you had then for recording on the field. And very, very industrious.
This evening we're marking the connection that the BBC has had with the English Folk Dance and Song Society over the years, and Peter Kennedy's work represents a significant contribution to that story. We're celebrating with a new commission. Jane Harbour has written a piece called Kind, which uses one of Kennedy's archive recordings, the well-loved song Barbara Allen, which he recorded many times, but on this occasion, in 1950, he was in Bellstone in Devon, hearing it from the mouth of farmer Bill Westaway.
So early in the month of May, when grey birds they were singing, a young man on his deathbed lay in love of Barbara Allen.
The fact Jane has honed in on this recording is just one more example of how Peter Kennedy's work continues to influence musicians to this day. And so, during the interval, we thought we'd paint more of a picture of this man who had considerable pedigree. His father was Douglas Kennedy, the much-celebrated president of the English Folk Dance and Song Society, or EFDSS as it's known. His aunt was Maud Carpellies, a hugely significant dance teacher, field recordist and biographer of Cecil Sharp. So Peter Kennedy, born in 1922, had every reason to achieve what he did. And yet, as we'll hear, his story wasn't without its controversies. Charming by all accounts, but perhaps a little shady too. A complicated, driven individual who inspired many.
When I first came to London in search of songs, I knew that I had to go to Cecil Sharp House, the home of the English Folk Dance and Song Society, because I had been told there was a wonderful library there. And it was there that I first met Peter Kennedy.
That's Shirley Collins, who's still a much-loved leading light of the folk world. But in the beginning, it was a struggle. The EFDSS were fiercely protective of the recordings they were collecting, and it was only thanks to Peter Kennedy that she was able to make headway.
It was such a difficult place to break into. They didn't want you there. It was a sort of society of sort of upper middle class people who were just hoarding this stuff and not wanting to spread it. I persisted and got into the library, but the person who opened up the house most of all was Peter Kennedy. He opened the cellar and we had singing evenings where each person in the circle would take it in turn to sing a song and Peter would talk about it. He just made us welcome, and that was such a relief after the frosty reception we'd had upstairs. And not only was he friendly, of course, he knew what he was talking about. You know, whatever songs we sang, he had probably collected a version of them and was able to talk. And it was just the encouragement we got that was so marvellous.
Oh, master, says he, have you got a little crabfish you can sell out of me with me? Aye, Jinnimy, oh, Jinnimy, come along o' me.
One of the most wonderful things that happened to me at Cecil Sharp House was meeting Harry Cox, the Norfolk traditional singer, and George Maynard, the Sussex singer. And to see these two old chaps sitting at a table drinking cups of tea with their cloth caps on and knowing that they were going to sing to us later was most remarkable. And that was Peter who arranged all that.
As I walked out one May morning,
Italy. Her lovely lass came tripping by as light as any fairy.
Peter Kennedy left all sorts of treasures after he died in 2006 and was quite careful about where it all ended up. So Halsey Manor down in Somerset has his books and the records that he bought as he travelled around the world, the commercial releases that he collected. But his own personal sound recordings that he made have come to the British Library, which is where I am now. And I'm going to be taken by the curator, Janet Topfarjon, down, down, down into the basement.
There's actually 1,660 magnetic reel tapes that we're looking at here over the span of from the 1950s when he first began right through to pretty much early 2000s when he was getting elderly and he stopped recording at that point.
Looking at it here, we're seeing all the spines, all the boxes, obviously, and it's just so tantalising. There's so many names, you know, you kind of recognise. And there's locations as well. I can see Abbots Bromley up there where he must have gone many times, I would have thought. We've got Bampton, Sidmouth, all these fantastic locations around the UK, Padstow, and then these names which kind of leap out of you, the sort of famous names, as it were, of folk. Bob Copper, there's Shirley and Dolly Collins here. Harry Cox, lots of Harry Cox. Many, many boxes of Harry Cox, in fact. And then down here, we're going across the world. Norway, we've got flutes and horns, drums, Croatia, Serbia.
He recorded around Europe and the United States primarily. But he, in his archive, he, over the sort of 50 years that he was working, he was in touch with lots of other recordists also, who were themselves recording in their areas of the world. And so he acquired recordings and archives from other recordists also. And of course, you know, besides that, he didn't always work alone. So he recorded with other names that we know very well, people like Alan Lomax.
I was producing a television series called Song Hunter with the famous American folk song collector called Alan Lomax. And he had already made a reputation with his programs on American folk music, and now he was collecting British folk music.
Yes, David Attenborough made folk music programs before he became a natural history broadcaster. There was a connection between the two subjects. For a while, the music collecting team shared an office with the fledgling Natural History Unit in Bristol. And Peter Kennedy developed a parabolic microphone for recording singers that was later used to record birdsong.
Peter did work quite a bit with Alan Lomax. They made a film together, Os Os We Os, the story of the Padstow May Day.
Os Os We Os!
I wonder myself if Peter was a bit overwhelmed by, you know, Alan's own reputation, because Alan had been recording for years before. But I know they got on well, and with collectors, there's always this enthusiasm for what you're doing and for what you're collecting, what you're finding. And I think they had stories to swap. I think Peter had enough of himself there to realise his own worth and his own value as well.
But nonetheless, there was inevitably a certain amount of jealousy about how Alan got the limelight and Peter, who supplied so many of the contacts, did not. And it would have been almost inhuman for Peter not to feel a certain amount of resentment.
There are some tapes here that have written on the spine, As I Roved Out, which of course is the programme that Peter Kennedy produced and presented, I would have thought, for the BBC. And that came about actually as a part of a sort of dialect project that the BBC started up, didn't it?
In 1952, I believe, the Music and Dialect programme was initiated. And the BBC then gathered together a number of recordists working in musical traditions and dialects who would then be sent around and go around the country and make recordings. And they would then produce and present them on various programmes on the BBC. And one of those series of programmes was the As I Roved Out, which lasted from 1953 to about 58.
As I roved out on a May morning, and a May morning right early, I met my love upon the way, oh Lord. hard, but she was early.
As I Roved Out was remarkable. For the first time, these songs were heard on the radio, sung by the people who knew them, rather than by trained professionals in polished arrangements.
Her boots was black and her stockings white, her buckle shone like silver.
Irish singer Sarah Macomb became a household name when her recording of As I Roved Out was used as the signature tune for the programme.
And she sang lilt-a-doodle, lilt-a-doodle, lilt-a-doodle-dee.
It's interesting, isn't it, the BBC does that at that time.
Do you know why? I mean, we're post-war, aren't we? Are we getting interested in nationalist patriotism or the working lives of people? Or I don't know.
It is interesting, actually. I was just examining a PhD recently by a person called Thomas Weston, who was looking at exactly this, what he called the recording moment in the UK, which was around this post-war, early 50s period, when you begin to see programmes such as the BBC's, such as Peter Kennedy was bringing about. And it was to do with this creation of a of nationhood, in a sense, in a sound world. What does the nation sound like? And music and dialects was an important part of that.
That song we were talking about, the Banks of the Sweet Primroses, there's one from a brushmaker in Plymouth, Market Alley in Plymouth, and there's one here from North Devon.
Yeah.
Where did you hear it from yourself?
Well, I can't say the first time I heard it, because I was only a little girl, when our old folks used to sing them, like years ago, you know.
People responded to him, they trusted him, they opened up to him. And that's quite a rare quality, I think, especially with the gypsies. Now, Peter recorded a great many songs from English gypsies. And what's wonderful as well is that not only do they sing their songs to him, and they have hundreds of songs, but they also tell him stories and their own life stories. And you don't do that unless you really, trust that person who's recording you.
And what sort of a tune would your song have, with your version of it?
Well, I'll tell you the best I can, but you mustn't expect too much, because I tell you, I'm getting over the flu. It was, I walked out on one midsummer's morning, just to view those fields and to take fresh air. It were down by the banks of the sweet primroses, where I'd beheld them most lovely fair.
He was extraordinarily charming.
This is Malcolm Taylor, who ended up running the Vaughan Williams Memorial Library at Cecil Sharp House, the headquarters for the EFDSS, for many years. In the early days, he was rubbing shoulders with Peter Kennedy, but not always comfortably.
One of the reasons that I wanted to go there was not only to meet my heroes like Shirley Collins and Martin Carthy, but I thought I would meet some of these field workers. And I've become very aware of his work with Folk Songs of Britain and Ireland, that huge book, and the Cademan series, which came out on Topic, the Tame Record set. And I thought, yeah, I'm going to meet him one day. And I did. I met him many, many times in my 35 years at the EFDSS. And I always found him extraordinarily charming. But almost within days of starting at the EFDSS, I was warned about this man. And he had a very, very poor reputation. There's lots of reasons. I've thought about this quite a lot. Peter and a number of his generation, like Alan Lomax and Kenny Goldstein, they saw collecting and the results of that collecting as a business. Mm-hmm. Within 6 months of being at Cecil, I'd heard every sort of scam that was going. And one of them was that he would get singers to sign a contract saying that all songs that you know currently and are likely to remember in the future, you can only sing to me, to Peter Kennedy. And then, of course, there were the rumours of recordings being sent to him, and then all of a sudden they're appearing on Folk Tracks.
And which was his commercial label.
Which was his commercial label, and no permissions sought or given by the donors.
Did Peter Kennedy, did he actually ask you to do things which were a bit awkward, but you kind of felt you had to do them?
He did approach me 1 or 2 years before he died. He was after various bits of film footage, and I would just say to Peter, what do you want it for? I mean, I said, you can have it, But what do you want it for? If you're going to publish it, we need to just have a piece of paper signed that you can use it.
Peter Kennedy left the English Folk Dance and Song Society under a cloud. But one thing's for certain, he cared where his life's work would end up. Towards the end of his life, he had regular meetings with curators at the British Library to work out just how his archive would be both preserved and disseminated. Topic Records has license to release his recordings commercially and has done so quite masterfully through their Voice of the People series. The British Library, meanwhile, has begun the job of digitising the Peter Kennedy tapes they have and thereby making them freely available to us all. Janet Topfarjon.
We've managed so far to digitise about 250 of them. And those that we have digitised, we have put online on our BL, British Library Sounds website. Quite easy to find, world and traditional music, Europe, and there you go, you sort of are navigated to Peter Kennedy collection. And there are sounds there, some of his very early recordings.
Let's just click on, 1949, the first one. And up comes Jim Small, Carols and Folk Songs of Cheddar, recorded in Somerset. And we can click on that link. And there is the sound file.
As I was a-walking one morning at ease, viewing the leaves that had fell from the trees, all in full motion appearing to be, those that had withered, they fell from the tree.
Isn't that just so gorgeous and so present? The quality of that recording, he could be sitting here.
Yeah, well, I think that's part of the point. He was sitting right there when he was making the recordings.
And getting right up and close, there, close in.
And he would, you know, set a singer down and he would say, what songs do you have? And he would record everything that that person could remember. Sometimes they didn't remember it quite so well. And they'd have to start again and so forth. But that all adds to the intimacy of the recording. It really does feel as though you're with both of them in the room right there.
What's the life of a man any more than a leaf? A man has his seasons, and why should he grieve? For though in this world we appear fine and gay, like a leaf we must wither and soon fade away.
They are fantastic recordings. He had a very skillful way of miking up a situation and use very good equipment, I think. He did amazing work. Let's not beat about the bush. The volume of work and the quality of the work that he produced was phenomenal, absolutely fantastic material. And so that can't be denied.
Janet, as the curator of the World and Traditional Music Collection at the British Library Sound Archive, how does Peter Kennedy's collection fit in? Is it significant?
It is, in my view, one of the most significant collections of British and Irish music's languages, even, because, you know, he has lots of conversations with people, so there's lots of dialects that you hear on the recordings and customs archive. But importantly, it's over a very long span of time. So you can sometimes trace musicians, you know, from the 50s for several decades afterwards, like the Coppers, for example.
One May morning I chanced for to roam and strolled through the fields by the side of the grove. It was there I did hear the harmless birds sing, and you never heard so sweet.
And you never heard so sweet.
You never heard so sweet as the bird in the spring.
It's a really interesting documentary over a 50-year period, and I think it's highly significant, and we are so pleased that we're able to digitize it, preserve it, so that it can be made available for future generations.
Peter Kennedy was clearly a man of many talents. It's wonderful to hear the British Library putting his historical collection right up there as the most significant we have. There are photographs too. That trust Kennedy got with his microphone, he also captured with his camera, getting some wonderfully natural shots of the rural folk he met and so carefully documented. His monumental book, Folk Songs of Britain and Ireland, is still a well-respected classic. His Fiddler's Tune book still continues to inspire, and the more those extraordinary recordings become available, the music he collected will continue to echo down the generations.
That you never heard so sweet.
You never heard so sweet as the birds on the spray.
In the end, like Sharp, you just think, well, thank God he did it.